21st. I have lost no time. This evening, late, after I had heard Theodore go to his room, I had left the library early on the pretext of having to write letters. I repaired to Mr. Sloane, who had not yet gone to bed, and informed him I should be obliged to leave him at once and pick up a subsistence somehow in New York. He felt the blow. It brought him straight down on his marrow bones. He went through the whole gamut of his arts and graces. He blustered, whimpered, entreated, flattered. He tried to drag in Theodore's name, but this I, of course, prevented. But finally, why, after all my promises of fidelity, must I thus cruelly desert him? Then came my trump card. I have spent my last penny. While I stay, I am a beggar. The remainder of this extraordinary scene I have no power to describe. How the bonhomme, touched, inflamed, inspired by the thought of my destitution, and at the same time annoyed, perplexed, bewildered, at having to commit himself to doing anything for me, worked himself into a nervous frenzy which deprived him of a clear sense of the value of his words and his actions. How I, prompted by the irresistible spirit of my desire to leap astride of his weakness and ride it hard to the goal of my dreams, cunningly contrived to keep his spirit at the fever point, so that strength and reason and resistance should burn themselves out. I shall probably never again have such a sensation as I enjoyed tonight. Actually feel a heated human heart throbbing and turning and struggling in my grasp. Know its pants, its spasms, its convulsions, and its final senseless quiescence. At 1:30 Mr. Sloane got out of his chair, went to his secretary, opened a private drawer, and took out a folded paper. "This is my will," he said, "made some weeks ago. If you will stay with me, I will destroy it." "Really, Mr. Sloane," I said, "if you think my purpose is to exert any pressure upon your testamentary inclinations—" "Page 21. "I will tear it in pieces," he cried. "I will burn it up. I shall be as sick as a dog tomorrow, but I will do it. Ah!" He clapped his hand to his side as if in sudden, overwhelming pain, and sank back fainting into his chair. A single glance assured me that he was unconscious. I possessed myself of the paper, opened it, and perceived that he had left everything to his saintly secretary. For an instant a savage, puerile feeling of hate popped up in my bosom, and I came within a hair's breadth of obeying my foremost impulse, that of stuffing the document into the fire. Fortunately, my reason overtook my passion, though for a moment it was an even race. I put the paper back into the bureau, closed it, and rang the bell for Robert, the old man's servant. Before he came, I stood watching the poor pale remnant of mortality before me, and wondering whether those feeble life gasps were numbered. He was as white as a sheet, grimacing with pain, horribly ugly. Suddenly he opened his eyes. They met my own. I fell on my knees and took his hands. They closed on mine with a grasp strangely akin to the rigidity of death. Nevertheless, since then he has revived and has relapsed again into a comparatively healthy sleep. Robert seems to know how to deal with him.